Join Big Daddy on the Big Daddy Liberty Show every Friday mornings at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 101.9 High FM. The Big Daddy Liberty Show is the only show in South Africa that discusses current affairs, politics, and economic topics through the lens of liberty. Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Molo Sanbonani, hello, how's it, and shalom. Welcome to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. The Big Daddy Liberty Show. That's right, I am your host, Big Daddy Liberty, your favorite fat boy. Hi guys, welcome to it, and Shabbat shalom to everybody. Today's show will be a bit of a sadish one to an extent, because I do feel like there is a weird energy that's beginning to set in place in the country. Obviously, the coronavirus is at the heart of it, but it would seem as though that South Africans are beginning to really sit up and pay attention now to this disease, insofar as it having a greater impact on our social lives, it having a greater impact on the economy, and not necessarily the health element of it, which, yes, is very important. I mean, that's the primary reason for the actions that government is taking. But I do feel as though the greatest devastating impact that this condition, or excuse me, this virus will have is on the economy, especially given the direction that government has gone in responding to it. But before I get to any of that, let me welcome you guys once again to the show. Remember, the show is the only show in South Africa that views current affairs, economic and social and political issues through the lens of liberty, with me, your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. As always on the show, we begin the sort of first 8-10 minutes by having a look at the current affairs, you know, what made the news. And more than that, you know, what should we be paying attention to right now? And this is why I perhaps said at the beginning of the show that the singular focus perhaps in this little first 8 minutes or so will be the coronavirus and the various responses from the state, the private sector, and of course globally to this disease or this virus. After the break, and perhaps linked to an extent to the coronavirus epidemic, is a conversation I had with Germ, excuse the pun, but he's commonly known as Germ. He's a South African cartoonist, aka Jeremy Nell, where we spoke about free speech. We had a conversation there about free speech, and it's become topical now, I think, because of the regulations that have just been put out by the state regarding the coronavirus, the COVID-19 virus, essentially, and some of these new regulations. But I'll get into that just now. As I said, we have Jeremy Nell after the break. And as always, the show after the main interview will end with perhaps what we should be looking out for on social media and also in the news cycle going ahead. And of course, as usual, a new feature that we now have, we will look at who the Moomish of the Week is, the loser or Moomish of the Week. So I mentioned that, you know, the single topic that I'll perhaps be looking at in the show really is the COVID-19 and the coronavirus breakout in South Africa, where at the point of recording this show, the breaking news, of course, was that there are now 150 cases that have been confirmed of this disease and this virus. Now, if you are paying attention to not only its spread in South Africa and around the world, I think it's quite reasonable to expect and to assume that a very large proportion of the population will get this virus. And I don't think that is something that should necessarily be feared. And let me just hash that out, because I think when I say that, people think I'm saying don't take it seriously. No, absolutely do take it seriously. But I do feel as though if you look at its spread across the world, I mean, we live in a very globalized society. We live in a very globalized and connected world where people travel around, et cetera, et cetera. And it stands to reason that this virus will likely be spread quite widespread, but it's the response that is super important. The South African government has taken steps to begin to address this, and a lot of these should be applauded. I mean, they're absolutely necessary and fantastic insofar as advocating for people to practice better hygiene, wash your hands, social distancing, the concept that, you know, if you can, stay away from crowded spaces such as your workplace, the mall, or, you know, these various spaces where we tend to congregate in large numbers. I think that's very wise. And if you're in that risk group that has been identified, for example, elderly people, people who are immunosuppressed, who may be sort of living with HIV, for example, people who have chronic illnesses that predispose them to being having the worst off effects of the virus, then yeah, absolutely, you should be even more vigilant and practice social distancing. I think these are very wise policy approaches by the state. And the declaration, the president obviously declared a national state of disaster, which empowers the state to be able to take even more actions in dealing with this coronavirus. But now, perhaps the classical liberal in me becomes a little, you know, concerned when I think about this, because, you know, we should still be very vigilant as citizens that in the process of dealing and responding to the COVID-19 crisis, and absolutely we've got to respond to it, and we need to hold our government accountable in ensuring that it does everything it can to respond, we still need to be quite vigilant in making sure that certain freedoms that we have, constitutional freedoms that we have, aren't trampled on in the process of, you know, dealing with this public health challenge that we have at the moment. Because, I mean, some of the regulations that were gazetted yesterday really do point to a little bit of state overreach in, you know, sort of the government's response. I mean, for instance, there it is now effectively a provision that all restaurants and, you know, taverns and clubs, for example, must be closed with immediate effect if, you know, they have more than 50 people. In fact, let me read it verbatim. All registered or licensed on-consumption liquor premises, which can accommodate including taverns, restaurants, and clubs, must be closed with immediate effect or must be limited to accommodate no more than 50 persons, provided that adequate space is available and that all directions in respect of hygienic conditions and limitation of exposure of persons with COVID-19 are adhered to.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
At face value, of course, this is absolutely fantastic advice insofar as, you know, the need for facilities that have more than 50 people in them to take these sort of precautions. But I do think we also need to consider the potential job losses when you do something like this. For instance, when you then couple this with the fact that that same regulation sets a limit on the sale, dispensing, or transportation of alcoholic beverages, I'm not sure I understand the full rationale of that. And it would be very nice, I think, if the state could explain that in real terms, because this, and I mean, there has already been reaction from the hospitality industry to say that, look, this is really going to cripple this sector, which in reality already is facing a lot of pressure, given that the transmission of this virus has been largely been attributed to, you know, foreign travelers coming to the country, revelers and tourists. So I think it's something, you know, as we pass these regulations, and this is part, the real point I'm making here, we need to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, all state regulation must take into account those that it seeks to regulate. You know, we can't be doing things which may not have full basis in taking account, you know, the realities on the ground. And we can't be passing laws that perhaps unfairly infringe. So, it would be very interesting to hear what the rationale is for this. Because again, as I said, I have, you know, I'm super empathetic, to those who work in this industry who might be looking at this and thinking, oh my goodness, this is my livelihood that I will be deprived of here. And I think there are very reasonable and rational steps, that the state itself, by the way, has really sort of put into place. That we're creating an environment where we take precautions, you know, excellent hygiene practices, you know, keeping 2 meters away from people around you, you know, all these things that are in place already, which I think were very adequate in helping to keep the numbers of people who could perhaps get this virus down. So I think there would be a very good reason for us to understand, some of the rationale between of these new regulations, without creating unnecessary panic, of course, because there's absolutely no need for that. Which comes to the last thing I really wanted to look at when it comes to these new regulations, the idea, the regulation that, you know, people could actually be imprisoned for 6 months or fined for spreading quote-unquote fake news about the COVID-19. You know, I'm very, very cautious. I'm very, very cautious of any government's attempt that tries to regulate speech, that tries to control thought and centralize it to government. I'm very, very cautious, no matter what the crisis is. And the thing about government is once it appropriates a power for itself, whether it was born out of a crisis like this one or whatever the case may be, it seldom gives that power away. It seldom relinquishes that power, even when that said crisis is gone. So, to seed ground now that accepts that we can fine and imprison people for essentially spreading quote-unquote fake news. And by the way, this is not a defense of the fake news. Of course, it's absolutely reprehensible that people spread the fake news. But I've always been of the view that the best way to fight, you know, the agents of disinformation and lies is by actually being forming rather part of a larger grouping that spreads good information, quality information, and reputable information. You don't do it by basically driving them. What I would assume this will do is driving these individuals underground, creating these weird dark webs of people who spread this fake news and spread panic. What you need to be able to do is identify them openly as they're spreading the fake news and dispel the fake news there and then using free speech and saying, actually, you're wrong because these are the measures that we need, should be taking. And what you may be spreading right now is fake news and it's not right. So I'm a little worried about that. And perhaps it segues quite nicely after the break to my conversation with Jeremy. Now, this is pre-recorded, so please do. I'm still traveling and on the road, so I'm not in a quiet studio environment. We actually interviewed Jeremy as we sat in a coffee shop. So please do bear with the background noise, but it's very audible. You'll be able to hear the conversation quite well. As we looked at the dangers and the assaults against free speech that South Africans are facing and really across the globe that we're facing. So after the break, my interview with Jeremy Nell, popularly known as Germ, the South African cartoonist, on the issue of free speech.
This is the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, you're listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. As I mentioned before the break, I do have a special guest in studio, a voice who, I don't know if I should say this, insofar as it's not so much the voice that we hear a lot of, but his voice through his art. I'm talking, of course, about Jeremy Nell, who is popularly known as Germ, the cartoonist. I'll let him chime in. What's that slogan of yours? You're the second best cartoonist? What is it?
No, I think I was the 39th best at one stage, but I think I've dropped down to like 100 or something. I'm competing with South Africa's world status.
Hey, man, I was about to say, you are literally going up against the royalty in most cases of SA cartoon industry. But Germ, before we actually get into the conversation, because let me just quickly set out for the listeners what we're going to be talking about here, because
Let's not mention to them that you called me Germ, and this is a very bad time to speak about germs, particularly since we hugged.
Yeah, I was about to say, man, a coronavirus is going to be getting the both of us. Germ, there's a very big conversation to be had, and we're going to have it here, around some of the freedoms that we're seeing being eroded away by not only governments, right, these governments across the world and South African governments in particular, but also by some big corporates both of whom are being sort of goaded in this direction of being anti-liberty by a young generation, a millennial generation to a large extent, who are immersed in these terrible ideas such as post-modernity, critical race theory. I can go down the line. You know, these ideas that basically elevate the group over the individual and basically suggest now that there is a hierarchy of groups, that some groups are more oppressed or privileged than others, etc., etc. And essentially based on that hierarchy, they get to decide. They'll be the arbiters of who can speak freely, think freely, etc., etc. So we're going to have that conversation, I suppose, with that being the basis of what we're going to be talking about. And let me zoom in here and actually go straight to you. Jerm, as a cartoonist, you are someone who is at the a satirical cartoonist at that. You're someone who should be at the forefront of providing quality commentary on society, satire and the like. But you seem to have been stymied by and large by the industry you work in. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about what's been happening to you?
Okay, so I think you are referencing what happened at the beginning of the year where Helen Ziller shared a cartoon of mine that I drew for the Institute of Race Relations midway last year. Didn't get much response. Well, I got response, but nothing controversial. And suddenly Helen tweeted it, and all hell broke loose. People read into it as it's they thought it would be. They thought it was racist and all kinds of nonsense. It caused a national outrage, and these social justice warriors, these sort of postmodernists, these millennials who don't understand satire very obviously, decided to try and get some of my contracts killed as a result. And very shortly after that, my Facebook page, my fan page of 60,000 followers got terminated by Facebook because a bunch of these social justice types decided to just en masse report it. And I think the algorithms just eventually gave in, and so the page got removed because nothing was offensive on the page. And so what this showed me, though, is that Facebook is not a government institution. And this is, I think, where you're kind of leading to, because I don't really actually appreciate government censorship. I don't mind censorship if it's from a private company, like Facebook. They certainly can censor. But what does it mean in the long run where there's no appeal process and if the censorship is completely unfounded? So, yeah, you could say that I was stymied a bit.
And that's the interesting sort of point I wanted to get to. Last week on the show, I had a conversation with David Bullard, a guy who you're well acquainted with.
I actually did a podcast with him.
There you go. And we had this conversation because David, to a large extent, has also been a victim.
Yes.
If I can characterize him as a victim, but I'm sure you wouldn't appreciate that characterization. But David has been subject to the outrage culture.
But he's a genuine victim in this instance.
Yeah. And the point I wanted to get to, and you've alluded to it now, is that the behaviors that we're seeing today of repressive anti-free speech conduct, if you will, conduct, is not just confined as it historically was to the state. In other words, the idea that a group of people gave the state the power to decide who can and can't say certain things. You're now finding that because of where the genesis of the ideas, mostly the sort of university, millennial university graduates.
Academia.
Absolutely. But immersed in the postmodernity, the critical race theory, and the intersectionality, these ideas that they learn at university, basically. Because these guys eventually, you know, transcend being just being students and graduate and then enter the world of work, either in government or in the private sector, in corporates, those ideas are beginning to filter into these institutions, which historically were meant to protect our rights and our freedoms as individuals. But now they're perverting those very institutions to be the ones that police language and thoughts. Your thoughts?
You know, I had Peter Boghossian and Andrew Doyle, who's otherwise known as Titania McGraw, on Twitter, great satirist, and they were on my podcast, and they were talking. And both of them, by the way, are left leaning. This is not a left wing, right wing thing. This goes beyond that. And both of them have said that this is a very worrying trend that's happening globally, because it's, as you rightly say, it's starting in the sort of academia circles, all right, and it's infecting the business and corporate world, because they leave the academia. Those who manage to graduate, Otherwise, they become professional students, lifetime students.
I mean, the University of KZN kicked out about 2,000 students who had spent more than 8 years already trying to get their degree. So trust you me, this is a big problem.
I enjoyed my third year so much that I decided to do it four times. But look, it's a very serious thing because to quote again Peter Boghossian, he said they've rigged the game. They're changing the definitions. They're changing the meanings of words. Okay, so what was, for example, once considered to be racist is no longer what it classically means. Okay? Yeah, you and I are sitting here, right? I'm white, you're black. We both see the world in very similar ways. We're not interested in skin color. We're interested in ideas. However, because of stuff that I might draw or say, I get called a racist by these woke sort of post-modern millennials. They've completely reframed what it means to be racist. And not just that, the same thing, it's all these hot button topics like being sexist. I'm married to a woman who does not think I am sexist, yet you have men telling me that I'm sexist. They've completely ballsed up the whole thing.
It's fantastic. And it's actually what we refer to in psychology as concept creep. The idea that you have an existing word that has a traditional meaning. Everybody knows what the meaning is. But these vested interest groups slowly but surely expand the meaning of this word with the view, of course, eventually of perverting the meaning.
Yes.
And you see this a lot as a technique of, you know, these various groupings that want to police language and thought.
Let
me zoom in a little bit. Mm. You now have a problem worldwide where there are interest groupings. And again,
hang on, sorry.
They're not always on the left or the right.
Yeah, let's just say this. When we say worldwide, we mean the West.
Yes.
So I don't think we're seeing this in the East.
Yeah, to a large extent. I would strongly agree with that. But mostly also because the ideas that underpin this behavior do come from Western universities.
Correct.
I mean, when you see it a lot in South African universities, a lot of this nonsense is almost exactly downloaded, if you will, from American universities.
Right.
It has no genesis here, per se.
But it needs an exodus.
No. the question I wanted to get to was, you know, Jeremy, the listener on the show might be wondering, oh, Big Daddy, this is the second week now that you're dealing with the issue of free speech, you're dealing with the issue of, the ability for one to express themselves freely. Why is this so important?
Well, I can interrupt you and tell you why it's important. Firstly, you are hosting a podcast. This is all about speech. I draw cartoons for a living, which is all about speech. Okay? In actual fact, political satire is, I believe, some sort of, gauge on a democracy's thermometer. Okay? The more I am censored and not allowed to say stuff, the more dangerously low that mercury reading, or should I say it the other way around? Which way, mercury reading should go downwards, hey?
Well, upwards, if the temperature's going up.
Okay, so we want it. Okay, well, in the context of my metaphor, we want
you're the first person to get lost in metaphors. Trust me, I do it all the time on the show.
whichever way it goes, we want it to stay at a healthy level.
Yes.
Okay, that's the point.
And you're not wrong, because to a large extent, I've made this point quite a lot. You cannot defend any other right in a society if you do not defend, and we just spoke about this off air.
Well, it's the First Amendment. Rights. It's the First Amendment in the U.S.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you cannot criticize any institution, whether it be government or a big corporate or whatever the case may be, using what is essentially a freedom of speech, a freedom of expression, then all other rights become almost irrelevant. And
exactly.
So I would posit that both the right to speech and free thought and the right to property, that is property rights, are the most foundational rights in a society. Am I wrong in that, Jim?
No, I think you're perfectly right. In fact, just before we went on air, I was saying to you that I think property rights are probably the most important things. I mean, speech is part of that. For example, in your home, you can say whatever you want. It's your property and your speech. If, however, we are in a, if I'm in your home, then I must obey the rights of your property and what I'm allowed to say there. Otherwise, you're going to show me the door. And let's just also say this, because I think that this postmodern view of free speech is corrupting what it means. Also, let's just quickly touch on this. Free speech does not mean without consequences. Mm-hmm. Let's just understand this. It also, excuse me, it also doesn't mean that I have to listen to you. So if I, for example, on social media block you, okay, that's not me being anti-free speech. It's me just not wanting to hear what you have to say to me and to make it a little bit harder for you to see what I have to say because you're being annoying. That is absolutely not a free speech conversation at all. Free speech is about what I am allowed to say and what the consequences are. In no instance, and I say this across the board, but in no instance should anybody go to jail in South Africa, okay? I understand that there are very sensitive words and conversations, but I do not think that people should be sitting behind bars.
I agree.
At the taxpayer's expense for words.
I strongly agree. And this includes, and this is where I'm going to be a controversial here, but this includes with words that, like the K word and,
yes,
and the like. Because you see, you have a situation now where, again, it comes back to that slowly creeping
correct
attempt by the state to expand its powers.
Yes.
If you can now be jailed for saying the K word,
yeah,
what should stop another marginalized grouping from saying, well, I don't like this particular word.
Yeah, I don't like Israel's flag, so let's ban the flag, and so on and so forth. And it gets worse and worse. It just spirals downwards. But let me ask you a question quickly. Well, let me ask you for a thought experiment. If jail is the correct response for words, then my next question is, okay, then what is the purpose of that jail sentence? Is it to rehabilitate? I honestly don't think that Vicky Momberg is going to be rehabilitated. In actual fact, I think she's probably worse in her mindset now than what she is.
Yeah.
Okay? And I certainly don't think it's the responsibility of taxpayers, especially the poor people, to pay for her to sit behind bars because she got angry at a cop. Right. And this applies to anybody else, by the way. So, my response to that is more free speech. Okay? I don't like what you say. I'll tell you I don't like what you say. And there's a great comedian, Steve Hughes. He once said, nothing happens if you're offended. You don't get leprosy or cancer. Okay? You just have to deal with it somehow.
And you're not wrong, because it's partially a lot of the points that I often make too, especially on the show, which is, if you don't like what someone said, nothing stops you from quite rightly rebutting what they've said.
Correct.
Teaching, correcting, and rebuking, if that's even...
Write a blog post about it. Do something.
Absolutely.
I'm not a fan of Trevor's comedy, but I do think that his one show that he did was very poignant, where he told everybody in the audience to say the K word at one another and admit that they're all that. Okay? And there's a deeper meaning there. I think when you overexpose something, you dilute its power and you don't give it any hold over you. And the problem here is about how you respond to a word. If you talk smack about my wife, obviously I'm not going to like it, and I'll tell you. But at the same time, if I let it get me down and I cry and all that, then I'm the one who's letting those words destroy me, and I'm letting that take hold of my mental agency. And I think we need to be stronger than that.
I agree. And it's also partly why I argue against censorship, against shutting certain things down. Imagine...
We're talking public censorship, though.
No, I agree. Yeah. But also censoring words, particular words. Because here's my thing. You don't know what's happening. If you, for whatever reason, censor the use of a certain word or certain ideas or certain thoughts, whatever the case may be, you're effectively driving those people underground.
Yes.
And you won't see what they're up to.
You won't
see what's festering in their particular world.
And you're going to make it even bigger.
Exactly. And you also create martyrs out of them.
Correct.
Now they get to say, you see, we told you that society doesn't like our ideas, which invariably may be the case, right? But then they're able to mobilize around that.
Yeah.
And you've seen this now. Let me be precise and specific.
Yeah.
Here's a funny example, and even my use of it will shock some people, but let's go into this. A one Julius Malema, when he was still the ANC Youth League president, his big thing was to say, yes, 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 we want to fight against this current ANC and move towards, you know, economic liberation, which in their definition, as is currently EFF policy, the nationalization of mines and the like. Mm. This was deeply unpopular in the ANC. No one really liked this idea necessarily. Not because they don't like the ideas of the state earning stuff, but rather because it came from Julius Malema and his cheek towards the then ANC leadership. And for that reason, you can argue that he was actually suppressed in the first instance because a lot of gag orders on him. And then eventually, when he saw the writing on the wall, he was eventually kicked out. But look at what happened. Look at what happened after that. Because you've marked the guy, he was able to mobilize around this victimhood of being the oppressed, having this big machine called the ANC suppress him.
Yes, exactly.
And he started the EFF, a red and tooth and claw actual communist organization that's gaining support. So it's the dangers of suppressing people that are quite real, aren't they?
It's extremely real. In actual fact, it's a lot safer to know where hateful people are. Because by silencing them, and this is the problem with cancel culture. It's the idea that you're going to silence people because you don't want to hear what they have to say. You're not changing. You're not winning any war. You simply, as you say, you're pushing them into the shadows. You're pushing them around the corner. And this is where they get stronger and more powerful. Let me ask you something. Why do you think Donald Trump won? There are numerous reasons, but one of the very well-known reasons is because people keep on trying to silence and shut down any kind of conversation that is not in the mainstream. This is why we're seeing the rise of the right globally. It could be a bad thing if they are very extreme, but also a lot of people just are tired of being shut down, silenced, and having their words suppressed. So they're saying, well, tell you what, we're going to play the long game here and get you back down the line. But that's also not a healthy thing because you end up with extremely polarized society 10 years from now, 20 years from now, who knows? So the idea is to let words just play their course and stop trying to silence people. Just as a cartoonist, I'd much rather know where the idiots are than to try and find them because then I run out of material.
I truly agree. And before we head to our first break, and remember, dear listener, I will have Jeremy on afterwards in the last 10 minutes as we sort of look towards how we can address some of these issues. I just want to make a quick point, and maybe we'll hash it out after the break.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. Oddly enough, the reactionary response to what has largely been the left suppressing speech.
It definitely
I don't
is the
trust
left.
The right either. And I'll go into that in detail after the break, because there's certain things about them which would see them also want to appropriate these powers in order to protect their particular worldview. And I'll be precise and specific in how I think this will happen after the break. But dear listener, stay tuned. After the short break, we're going to continue our conversation with Jeremy Nell, popularly known as Germ, South Africa's 39th, as you said, and dropping favorite cartoonist. Welcome back. It's your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. I hope you had a chance to get a drink or something. It's about to get lit. Usually in the last 10 minutes, I probe my guest, and I often play the leftist. So for them to, or the woke types rather, for them to sort of respond to some of the common tropes that are thrown. But, Jim, welcome back also to the show.
You and I are talking about words and silencing words, and you called yourself fat. Now, we know that that's also very offensive these days. What's the new term for fat? We need to use the politically correct term. And in fact, I don't even know because I don't follow political correctness. But anyway, okay, body positive. There we go. It's your favorite body positive boy.
Hey man, there's some weird stuff. Actually, on that particular point of these body positivity people, guys, there is nothing more dangerous. There is nothing more irresponsible than telling overweight and obese people that it's actually totally fine for them to be that size. Yeah. And I say this as someone who's morbidly obese. I mean, I weigh just over 200 kilograms. There is nothing more dangerous than anybody then coming to me and saying, oh, you know, you're fine, Big Daddy. Don't worry about your weight. Whereas I know that people who are obese are at greater risk of heart disease, hypertension, chronic ailments. And funny enough, well, not really funny at all, the coronavirus, obesity is a very big risk factor for us. So guys, take it from me. Get on that weight loss journey.
And stop being politically correct.
Absolutely. Get on that weight loss journey, no matter how long it takes. Mm. I'm doing the whole low-carb, high-fat thing. Anyway, without digressing too much, Jim, what I often do in the last sort of 8 minutes or so that we have is I then begin the conversation around what we can do to address the assault on these freedoms. But before I do, remember I mentioned before the break that I'm a little skeptical of arguing that the right and its reaction to what have been mostly the left who are censorious in their behavior would be a good thing. So let me play a scenario out and I want to see what you have to say about it. The right, generally speaking, and I'm using a lot of the American definitions of this to a large extent, you know, the sort of conservative individual might be someone who then says, okay, we're not on the ascendancy because there's a reaction to what the left has been doing. But to protect that newly acquired power, in reaction to the left, how about we employ some of the very tactics that have now been given to the state as powers, to be able to curtail certain speech. So for instance, in America, you had the case of a one Colin Kaepernick, a NFL player, this National Football League, their version of rugby, lol, who basically would, every time the national anthem would play, would take a knee, which in NFL terms, or in that sports meaning is, you know, opting out of something. And mostly individuals on the right and the conservatives in America lost their minds when he did this, with all sorts of arguments of, oh, get that man off. How dare he do this? He's not allowed to do this.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have the right to do this. And there were calls for the banning of people expressing themselves in that regard, because it was seen through their argument. Now, this is the argument from the right, that it was quote-unquote unpatriotic. So do we not have a danger then of both sides being
open to
this kind of repressive behavior?
Yeah, definitely. But I think we do. But I don't think it's as dangerous. Let me tell you why. It's more of a counter-reaction to what is definitely stemming from the left. Now, there's nothing wrong intrinsically with choosing how you want to respect the flag or the national anthem or whatever. But we also know that it's a political message that's being sent, and you can understand that in sports arenas where the flag of your team, for example, is incredibly important. So you can understand why they get outraged. However, calling for banning and all that kind of stuff is, I think, probably quite extreme. But again, the context is this. They're not just randomly doing it. It's in response to. And what's happening, we're seeing a lot of in response to scenarios happening. And that for me is quite worrying, because it shouldn't be like that. There should be a degree of tolerance and engagement and conversation, not just shutting down other people. This is the problem with postmodernism. It's this continual, yes, the thing, it's a continual shift to the left, which is actually not a good thing, because it's progress for the sake of progress. Yeah, we had a bit of a noise there. Sorry, that was someone, there we go again. So someone moving the chair. It's progress for the sake of progress. It's not thinking pragmatically anymore. It's just people acting on emotion. The whole thing is a counter-reaction, but it can certainly go wrong. That's essentially my point. It can go wrong. There needs to be more engagement from people who disagree, not shouting down one another. That's critical.
Yeah, I agree to an extent. I mean, just a reminder to the listener, we are in a coffee shop, so, you know, there will be a lot of noise around us, but I'm sure you can hear our voices loudly, as I said earlier on, but I realize I had my mics on mute. I partially agree with you, Jerm, and I think that I need to clarify perhaps what is a common misnomer. Individuals on the right don't inherently always believe in the traditional classically liberal values.
Of course.
You know, there are very big differences. That's why I often online, when people say, Big Daddy, you're part of the right wing and you're on the right. And I say, actually, no, to a large extent, because there's a lot of things I disagree with when it comes to the right wing. There are a lot of areas of convergence, yes, absolutely, especially on economic issues.
Yeah.
But you tend to find that on social issues, on civil liberty issues, there can be very large differences. But Jeremy, as we sort of look at the last 3 minutes of the conversation, just to help us keep time, talk to me. And I see you wanted to make a point, and I'll let you make the points.
No, that's fine.
But talk to me about what can and should be done there for
to
protect freedoms.
Yeah. It's very simple.
Especially our freedom to express ourselves and free thoughts.
It's very simple. The state should not be criminalizing people. Right, number one. Number two, you should be free to say whatever you want, okay? But it doesn't mean that you should. I'm not going to just randomly go up to an old tunny and swear at her. that's just being ridiculous. However, If I do say something like that, okay, then you must have the right to tell me what you think, and there are consequences, because free speech does not mean without consequence. So simple as that. So we need free speech to fight free speech. That's my position, but the state mustn't get involved.
Jim, final question. Dude, you're an artist, and I think a lot of people forget that when we talk about cartoonists.
Yes.
Especially those who like deal in satires. I think they sort of think, oh, you guys are just doing this for, you know, the giggle, so to speak. But it really isn't.
No.
You guys are just like you would tune into a radio station and listen to a political analyst.
Yeah.
Or watch a social analyst on TV. You guys are providing solid analysis for society. What do we do to protect guys who are in your industry, especially if you disagree with the majority view of fellow cartoonists?
Well, then just use your right to free speech to moan about it. Go to my editor. Go make a noise. Make a noise. That's cool. If you disagree, you're welcome to disagree. Absolutely, 100%. The problem comes in is if you try and get me jailed.
Hey man, I hear you on that. And maybe as a final word, Jeremy, thank you very much for joining me on the Big Daddy Liberty Show. How do the folks find you on all your social media and the like?
The easiest is simply go to my website, germdraws.com, with a J, Germ.
And on social media, how do we find you?
My name is Germ.
Okay, there we go. Guys, you heard it from the man himself, Jeremy Nell, aka Germ. You can also find his cartoons, I still think, on various publications.
My website is the easiest. It's centralized.
There we go. A big thank you to Jeremy Nell, who, of course, also does draw for The Daily Friend. Remember, The Daily Friend you can find on www.dailyfriend.co.za. And maybe the timing of ending the show is perfect because it's getting rather rowdy, and we're going to have breakfast now. And on that glorious note, guys, thank you for listening. You have been listening to Big Daddy Liberty.
This is the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show, and thank you once again to Jeremy Nell, Germ, the South African cartoonist, for that interview and that conversation really on free speech. And I think it's a really important issue to keep in the back of the mind, especially as we go forward. Remember, in this last segment, we look at some of the items that are trending on social media and, of course, who the Moomish of the week is. Moomish, of course, being a South African slang word for the loser of the week. Guys, I suppose, as I indicated even before the major interview, the big issue really will be the coronavirus and COVID-19, the South African government's ongoing response to it. And again, we must support, again, don't get me wrong, people, we actually must support the South African government and, you know, our politicians in this particular regard for the work that they're doing. I think it's actually really been quite stellar. The only point I'm making is in doing that, in the support, just keep your wits about you and keep a close eye that we don't cede freedoms unnecessarily to a state that may use this potentially to experiment on other things that have nothing to do with responding to this virus. And perhaps as a call, I mean, one of the points we've been, one of the things I've been paying attention to on social media is people asking the question rightly, you know, where was this response from government on other issues that we face as South Africans? I mean, if they can be this diligent and efficient and really quite good, to be brutally honest, in tackling COVID, why don't we see the same level of good governance and efficiency on other issues? Surely, as South Africans, we deserve that. And it is quite possible, clearly, for government to do this, you know. Whether you believe in whatever iteration of government and its size, you know, you have to take your hat off to the state's response to this. It really has been very good. That's something I think I'm watching on social media as it develops. I mean, I'm seeing tweets from John Robbie, you know, and other media personalities on this. The other issue, of course, is as we go forward, the number of people who will be testing from this, as we also see whether, you know, it's beginning to transmit between South Africans locally now. I think there's 8 local transmissions that are now confirmed at the point of recording this. And you know, the major issue I raised in this week's episode of the Big Daddy Liberty Show on my YouTube channel, a variant of my show called Blacks Only, that's my facetious take on society's obsession with race, is, you know, we need to be mindful of poor South Africans and how they are protected and provided for in this period. You know, we talk a lot, for example, about hand washing and, you know, disinfecting our hands. And but sometimes we forget that, you know, for a lot of people, just access to water can be quite difficult, and, you know, soap and the like. So perhaps if there are initiatives across the country which are looking to provide those sort of resources, hey man, think about donating and assisting in that regard. Let's actually look after each other as South Africans. And, you know, the another point I made in some vlogs this week is, guys, do not be a part of the nefarious groups in this country who are trying to sow panic, who are trying to spread, to spread fake news. And as I said, the best way to deal with them is being a part of the coalition of people who spread good information, accurate information. I would like to count myself as those people who spread good information, insofar as I did a vlog from the checkers in Seapoint. As I was doing my shopping, because I still am on the road. I'm in Cape Town at the moment. But I did a vlog from inside the shop showing that, you know, there is no panic. There aren't people fighting over, you know, basic goods and necessities. There aren't empty shelves, so to speak. And there isn't a sort of panic buying phenomena en masse in this country. Yes, of course, there were some panic buyers, as we saw those visuals. But by and large, South Africans are actually being really responsible and being really calm about this particular virus. And what we saw really on social media was some media personalities and some, I hate to say this, but, you know, these race-obsessed individuals who are saying, oh, look at these white people. They're buying everything in the shops and, you know, they're buying stuff so that black people can't get stuff. I mean, that's irresponsible nonsense that we just do not need right now on, you know, any of our media platforms, especially at a time where so many South African families are genuinely afraid and are fearful of what's happening at the moment. So, guys, don't, if you get some weird WhatsApp message that you just are not sure about, instead of spreading it, verify it, you know. Take a moment to go look at responsible sources such as, you know, the Department of Health and the like, you know, and say, hey, is this really true and should I be spreading it? And 9 times out of 10, it'll probably be no. Don't spread it. But look at reliable sources for spreading confirmed and reliable information. And again, the state has a role to play in this, but you and I also as individuals have a role to play in this. So my Moomish of the week, unfortunately, has to go to some pockets of the media who literally on the 15th, which is a day, by the way, a lot of people earn their salary and would naturally go out and do their grocery shopping. A media then suggested on that day that, oh, this is panic buying. Because the day previously, the president had made an announcement of putting the country into a state of national disaster, so that those people who were buying on that day clearly must have been panic buyers, and there was pandemonium, according to some of these journalists. Look at all these people doing all this shopping. Whereas in reality, and really quite rationally, it was just a mixture of those who ordinarily do their shopping in the middle of the month, because it's been their payday, and perhaps a small grouping of people, maybe even less than 5%, who may have been doing panic buying, so that the empty shelves that you did see, because, you know, people are very opportunistic. They'll take these pictures of these empty shelves. They don't stick around and actually wait for staff to then restock those shelves. Because remember, a shop can't restock a shelf at the speed at which people buy sometimes. The item. So it takes a little bit of a while, you know, a few minutes, maybe an hour or so, a couple of hours for restocking, especially at these sort of mass, you know, bulk buying places like Makro and, you know, these big retailers. But, you know, guys, I really do encourage you to not be a part of the fake news brigade and be responsible, guys. Look after yourselves. And, with those words, let me thank every single one of you for listening to this week's episode of the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I will be back next week. I still am on the road. Yes, I am taking precautions. I am isolating myself. I'm driving. I'm alone mostly in the car. So I am taking precautions. And over the week, I'll be in Kimberley, Bloemfontein, and then back in Johannesburg. So you can expect some broadcasts from that side of the world and some interesting guests next week as we actually look at the economic impact of the coronavirus. I think that's the major conversation we'll be having next week. So I'll have a guest on who will talk about that. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. And with those few words, I will see you guys next week.